welcome to HR Solutions for Big and Small Organizations with Cindy Elstein, Bill Heffernan, and Lisa Hammond. Cynthia Elstein is the founder of People by CFE. She's a trusted human resources executive with many years of practical HR experience and consulting work in all industries. She provides HR services on a consultancy basis for small to mid-sized companies. Cindy also has a benefits background and is licensed in property and casualty and life and health insurance. William Heffernan is co-founder of ScreenSafe. He's a licensed clinical professional counselor and a certified employee assistance professional, in addition to specializing in drug-free workplace programs for employers. And I'm Dr. Lisa Hammond, CEO and co-founder of Prof360 and Attaché, a small business resource platform to help you stay in compliance with government regulations, to find the resources you need, and to manage your paperwork and your people. You're listening to HR Solutions for Big and Small Organizations. Today we are talking about sexual harassment prevention training, and that has been prompted by the fact that the city of Chicago has implemented a sexual harassment prevention training requirement for businesses in Chicago. I live in California, and California has had sexual harassment prevention training since 2005. It was the law passed, and in 2007 was when most companies implemented it. But we're going to talk about both of the state requirements and the city requirement. So, Cindy, would you like to start talk a little bit about what's going on in Chicago?
Sure. Just so you know that I did some research on this, and I spoke to the deputy commissioner at the City of Chicago Commission on Human Relations, because the issue of training has been so confusing because the state has different training models than the city. So this woman advised me that because of hate crimes, that the City of Chicago, Mayor Lightfoot, decided to do an intervention for hate crimes, and she initiated this whole bystander training. So that's how the whole thing started out. But the model is not actually completed, and it will be on the City of Chicago's website, but it's not there yet. The training will be effective July 1st, but the training has to be completed June 30th of 2023.
So what's the difference between bystander training and the sexual harassment prevention training?
This is Bill, and I think that's an awesome question. I think just to kind of put a fine point on this, as you know, California passed their law and their regulation requiring training for employees many years ago. I think, as you mentioned, back in 2005, and then it became a requirement in 2007. And that training is, and I hope you'll talk more about that, it's very comprehensive, it's 2 hours long, it's a robust program. The state of Illinois passed sexual harassment training in 2019, and then published a model training program to be used. And that program is essentially just a 1 hour training program. It's very didactic. You can make it more interactive if you wish, but unlike California's, it's a 1 hour didactic kind of a presentation. So now what the city has done is they have gone even further and said, okay, the state has this 2 hour requirement. It's been in place for the last 2 years. We're going to make a requirement for 3 hours of training. We're going to require that employers do 1 hour of education for their employees, 1 hour of training for their supervisors, and that everyone is trained, both employees and supervisors, in bystander training. Now, quite frankly, we don't know what that is yet, for sure. But I do know that about a year and a half ago, the Asian American community has a product or a training program that they have pushed out that I took about a year and a half ago on bystander training that I think does a nice job of helping people understand how to intervene when they see a person being harassed because of their ethnicity or some other variable. So my assumption is, my guess is that this training will follow that, you can be in the mode of that kind of training where it talks about, you know, if you see someone being harassed, going over and talking to them like you know them, or, you know, doing things that help interrupt that process. Yes.
Oh, I like that. That's not anything that we have in California at this point, but I can definitely see where that's something that could be useful everywhere. Because right. I think so often people don't know how to intervene.
Well, I think it's really scary. I mean, for the victims of mistreatment in the workplace, disrespect and harassment, it's scary to stand up and speak out. And I again, as you talked about earlier, Lisa, I think some of it is based on age and orientation to the workplace. Mm-hmm. You know, so for some of us who are at one point in our career, we're used to it, go with it. And for other people, they're not willing to tolerate certain kinds of behavior. So I think that just is it's, as I said, it's scary for people to stand up and say, hey, I don't like the way you're talking to me. I don't appreciate the way you're talking to me. I think it needs to stop. But it's certainly, it's scary for someone else to be on the side and to hear someone being mistreated and then to know how best to intervene. And, you know, recently one of my colleagues was doing training for an organization. And as she went through the training program, someone said, well, what do you do if you see someone being harassed? Can you speak up? And she said, yeah, absolutely. If you are witness to someone being mistreated or harassed, you can speak up. You can actually file a complaint. And the HR person that she was doing the training with said, oh, I didn't know that. And so, you know, I think, you know, there's still so much education to be done. And I think California's program about sexual harassment is so much more robust and interactive. Mm-hmm. But I'm grateful that in Illinois, we have at least started to address this and take some steps to make this something people talk more about. And I think one of the pieces in the city's legislation is that you have to post, you have to make sure there's posters about this. You have to make sure people know about this. And as Cindy and I know from our work together, doing training for folks around sexual harassment, it's so critically important that people know who to go to. Right. So if I see something, what do I do? It's really so critical that the companies make it obvious who you go to and who you let know about your concerns.
Yeah, one of the things that is done in California is that supervisors have to take 2 hours of training. Employees take 1 hour every 2 years. And one of the reasons that the supervisors have to take 2 hours of training is so that they do know what to do when someone comes and tells them. Because, you know, prior to the training, people would go tell their supervisor and their supervisor would do nothing.
Right.
Or the supervisor would try to, you know, tell the person how to respond as opposed to pushing it to human resources or wherever else it's supposed to go. So that's a critical piece of it. But I love the bystander training. I think that's such a wonderful idea. And you were talking about, you know, one of the things you might do is walk up to the person and start a conversation as if you know the person. So it's a very non-threatening way of intervening. Mm-hmm.
Right. I think that's one of the things I learned in that program is just figuring out ways, because it can be really scary. I mean, that training was oriented to, if you're getting on the public transportation, you see someone mistreating someone, yeah, going up to the person who's being mistreated and speaking to them like they're your old friends or your cousins or whatever, yeah, is a way to kind of diffuse and deflect the person who's mistreating them and to give the person who's being mistreated a chance to kind of get away. Yeah. In the workplace, you know, that could be effective as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And at the same time, it's always good if in the workplace, a person can confront the person who is mistreating the other, if they're able to step in and actually say something. But if they don't feel comfortable doing something, is what's important.
I think the issue of sexual harassment and harassment in the workplace is such an enormous issue, because we know in a workplace where people do not feel respected, where they do not feel valued, where they feel devalued, that they're not as productive. They're not as happy. They don't feel as committed. And right now, when you need to have everybody who works for you being committed to working, because there's such a, we're having such a hard time finding good quality employees, anything an employer can do to create a more respectful environment where people feel valued, heard, and appreciated is critical to operational success. So when a supervisor or a company owner feels like this is just too much, I can't do this, my reaction is you can't afford not to do this. And I do think that sexual harassment and harassment respect in the workplace has become more important now than probably it has been in many years.
Yeah, well, I think it's critical. The interesting thing here in, you know, in California, one of the things that Cindy and you were talking about is the gender and pronouns and what pronoun people want to use. And actually, one of the things considered sexual harassment is you intentionally using the wrong pronoun for someone. Mm-hmm. So that's considered sexual harassment.
Wow. Very interesting. Very interesting.
Lisa, can you tell us about the interactive type of training that you do in California, and in particular what you do with folks and to help drive home the message about harassment?
Yeah, so there are many ways that they do the interactive training. There are online interactive trainings where they'll actually time the training so you can't blow through it. The other thing is they'll have places where you'll click, you know, they'll ask you a question, you give the right answer, and then you can move on to the next, or you can get more information. If you give the wrong answer, you have to get more information. So those are the ways that they do the interactive online training. The training that I do, which is live, online, synchronous, we actually put people in breakout groups. We go over some cases and do them as case studies. Some are real, some are made up, some are kind of a combination of the two, but using a number of case studies. So that's the way that we make it interactive and have people talk about what they would do and then give the law behind what they should do and the company policy around what they should do.
I think that's excellent. I really do.
You know,
and hopefully we'll get more acclimated to that style of training. Yeah. In Illinois.
Yeah, I actually think it's so much better than the online trainings that are offered because you can tailor it to the type of organization that you're working with and things like that. The other thing that that California has a law about is anti-bullying training. And companies are to provide anti-bullying training, particularly certain ones, all schools and places like that have anti-bullying.
Boy, that's just so critical, you know, especially after we've seen what's happened in the last month or so with mm-hmm. what's believed to be at least partially attributable to a history of bullying. Mm-hmm. And so helping people stop that horrible cycle would be so critical.
Yeah.
You know, one of the places I've gone to get some of the scenarios that we use in our training is to the EEOC's website. And I just cannot tell you how interesting it is for me to go to the website and to pull up, you know, they have a media space or a news press release area on the EEOC's website, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's website. And you'll pull up some of the cases and they'll have listings of cases they've recently settled or cases that are pending. And you'll read about the behavior of people that led to the case. And then I'll read the article and I'll hear about there was one case a while back where a 50 plus or minus year old man was arrested at work for sexually assaulting teenagers.
Oh my gosh.
He was arrested at work. The police came to the job site, took him out of the workplace, and his employer didn't terminate him.
Wow.
And then he continued to sexually harass and inappropriately proposition teenage girls. And so you read that and you think, well, what did they think was gonna happen?
Exactly.
And so I think sometimes when it's really easy for us to assume that these kinds of things just don't happen anymore. And then you start to read about these cases and you think, oh my gosh, this does still happen. And there still are people who behave in ways that are so incredibly hard to believe. And there are still employers who continue to accommodate and tolerate bad behavior by employees.
Yeah, I think that the sexual harassment laws and just, you know, anti-harassment laws, period, for companies are so crucial, because that's how you change the behavior. Otherwise, it is brushed, you know, it's swept under the rug, and let's just pretend this didn't happen, or telling the victim to do something different.
Right, right.
You know, have you told them that this is not appropriate? And even if the person says yes, it's like, well, tell them again. I mean, I remember those days.
Well, and I think that raises a really good point. You know, when I do this training, when I've done this training with Cindy, one of the things I make a really clear point of saying to people is, listen, if someone comes to you and tells you that the way you're talking to them or the way that you're behaving is harassing and that they would really like you to stop, rather than getting defensive, because that's 9 times out of 10 what the person will do, become angry and defensive, they should stop and just for a second consider how much courage it took for that person to come to them and say what they just said. And second, how much generosity was demonstrated by that behavior, because they didn't have to do that. They could have filed a complaint against the harasser with their employer, with the state, or with the federal government without any warning. So for that person to come to them and say, you need to stop this, I would like this to stop, is both generous and courageous and should be recognized as such.
And Bill, I think it's great, because that would be part of the mediation action that'll take place. It's best to resolve it between the two people before bringing it further. And it's also confidential between those two people.
Yeah, I always encourage people, if they're not comfortable going to the harasser and asking that person to stop, that they go to the company first, because that's going to give them the fastest action. And so if I go to my employer and say, hey, this is what's going on, and ask them to make it stop, action can be taken right away. If I file a complaint with the state or with the federal government, it may take a little longer. Now, obviously, as an individual, I have the right to go to my employer and to the state and to the feds if I choose. I just say, you know, my first bias is go to your employer, because that way you can get more immediate action. Now, if the employer completely whiffs it and doesn't pay attention, then, you know, that's tremendously unfortunate and just a bad business decision.
Well, and from the standpoint of, as an employee, it's better to go to the employer first, because if you don't, the state's going to come back to the employer anyway.
And the city of Chicago now has new posters, which probably are not online yet, but they will be. And they just talk about sexual harassment. Don't ignore it. Take action. It gives you all the details on it and where to go. So to file your complaint, and you now have 365 days versus 360. So, and they're also including in there that they have, if you're a victim of sexual harassment in Chicago, regardless of gender, identity, don't ignore it, take action.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we've touched on a lot of the things that are important. And I think, you know, just to reiterate the fact that the one of the things an employer can do that's critically important is making sure that every employee knows exactly how to file a complaint. You know, one of the companies that Cindy and I dealt with, they actually had an outside person as the contact. So that if people who worked at the company weren't comfortable going to, you know, it's entirely possible that somebody, if it's a small company, that the person who's the harasser, we had years ago in the employee assistance world that I worked in, we had a company owner whose father was a harasser. So the dad worked for the company, and he was litigation on legs. because he just, you know, he would mistreat people and harass women. He harassed everybody, but he sexually harassed the females who worked for the company. And, you know, the unfortunate situation was the young person, the child who owned the business that the father worked for had to go to the father and say, this needs to stop, and to deal with his bad attitude about being told that his behavior was unacceptable. Mm-hmm. So making sure people have a way, whether it's internal or external, to make a complaint known is critically important.
And I agree with you, Bill. I've worked with another company that's very large. They're global. And they have a hotline. So in their hotline, they do recommend that they talk to somebody outside of the organization. And I'm doing harassment investigations for them as well. So that's another way to keep it, you know, very unbiased and all that, because it's out of the organization.
Yeah, I think that's critical almost for small businesses. If there isn't someone who's designated that people trust, it's critical to have someone outside the organization. A lot of the larger organizations, or even, you know, medium-sized organizations, have whistleblower lines. Mm-hmm. So that would be another place where people could report. One thing I wanted to mention, Cindy, in the document you sent, it says it's a record-keeping requirement, that the records must be kept for 5 years in terms of the training that's been provided. And record keeping is such an important piece of this, because if you're doing the training and you don't have record of who's taken it, if you don't have them sign something saying that they've taken it, then from an employer standpoint, that could land you in a lot of trouble, because you have no way of proving that these people took it. And if you aren't keeping the records, then again, you know, that could be a problem.
And that's something when Bill and I do training together, we make sure that they get a certificate of completion. And that they also, the human resource person, has a list of all the people that signed up for the webinar, because that's documentation as well. Plus, you know, you have a copy of their cert, you know, their completion certificate that you can put in their personnel file.
Yeah.
Right. These records have to be maintained.
What I love about this is that the document you have actually says the penalty, which is $500 to $1,000 per violation. And every day that that they're in non-compliance is considered a separate incident and separate violation. So those fines can rack up pretty quickly.
Yeah, and they've really increased them. It used to be $500, now it's $1,000. So that is very important to know. And I would imagine they're probably gonna do more audits within City of Chicago.
Yeah. So, go ahead, Bill.
I think that ends up being one of the challenges, is that, you know, these policies are in place, these requirements are in place. And actually, I'd be curious, we have done the training now for the state of Illinois for the last 2 years. I have one client who I'm going to be doing this city's training for as soon as we know what it looks like. But I have not yet heard of anyone doing any auditing of, you know, who's done this, whether it's happened. Is there much of a footprint out in California where employers know the state's going to come look at their files?
No, I don't think the state comes and looks for files unless there's a complaint that they feel is a legitimate complaint, and then they will ask for that. Speaking of that, in terms of record keeping, that's what we do with Attaché, is we help people to maintain their records and have an easy way of accessing them, keeping everything in one place. And if you do have some type of a audit, then it's easy to download all the records as opposed to having to go to each person's individual HR file.
Mm. Oh, that sounds incredibly important.
Excellent point, Lisa. And also, I think, you know, again, you know, they need to have a policy that's updated and in place, and all the an outline of all the procedures and the process. And then also they have to post the poster where people could see it. Now, most people are not in the office, so I guess it would be on intranets within mm-hmm. the organization.
Yeah.
Lisa, what are you seeing in terms of retaliation? Is there a big push in the training that you do to talk about retaliation? Because I know that's critically important here for even in the didactic presentation the state provides, and the training that we've done in the past, retaliation is a huge issue.
Retaliation is definitely a huge issue. It's, you know, a significant amount of time spent on retaliation and what that can look like in terms of, you know, in a retaliation could be simply not speaking to the person when, you know, you've had, there's been a complaint lodged and then you're not speaking to the person, or the supervisor of that person isn't speaking to the person, could be considered retaliation.
Right. I think that gets people two things. There's so many pieces of just the retaliation thing, because, you know, someone might say, well, I'm not, if what I'm saying is harassing, then I'm not going to speak to you anymore.
Exactly.
And that by itself becomes a form of harassment, or in this case, exactly, retaliation, because they're responding to a complaint that's been made. But, you know, we've seen workplaces where they say, hey, let's, you know, you're having a hard time with this person's mistreating you, so why don't we move you to a different shift or to a different work location? And the employer thinks, hey, I'm doing something good to help that person, because I, and if the shift is less desirable or the work location is less appealing, that's retaliation.
Exactly.
So these things that people are doing, thinking maybe it's okay, if they're not really, really thoughtful about how they're doing it, ends up being retaliation.
And absolutely.
And unfair treatment of someone who's raised a concern. Yeah. So it's, again, it's one of those nuances. It's really important for people to understand. There's so many pieces of this, and it's really critical that you have a thoughtful, at the leadership level, have a thoughtful discussion about your policy and making sure people understand it. And then when you are confronted with the situation, making sure that you respond as quickly as humanly possible, operationally possible, in a way that makes as much sense and doesn't cause harm.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I always talk about is what people call hostile work environment. And you'll very frequently hear employees say, well, this is a hostile work environment because they don't like their boss or something like that, which isn't technically a hostile work environment.
Right.
But if you're moving someone to a different shift where they now feel uncomfortable because of something, because of retaliation, as you've defined it, that creates a hostile work environment. Or if you don't deal with someone who's harassing and you've been told that you about that, that's the hostile work environment. So anything that relates to a protected class and the person feeling uncomfortable because of their protected class and how they're being treated, that is a hostile work environment, as opposed to having a bad boss, which is bad, but it's not.
it's interesting. I was doing training for an organization where they train people to do jobs. And someone said, well, and so one of the questions was, if your boss criticizes how you've done something, does that constitute a hostile behavior?
Right.
And, you know, what's interesting is how many people said yes.
Right.
And it's not. I mean, right. Your boss criticizes your performance and coaches you on how to perform better. That's the job of a boss.
Right.
You may not like the fact that you didn't do it right the first time. You may not like the fact that you're being coached about it. That's okay. You'll have to get over it, because that's the boss's job. So criticism and corrective action is not hostile behavior. It's just, but again, the nuance, the subtlety of what's going on here.
Right. And even the boss who yells at somebody inappropriately, that probably is not a hostile work environment. It's bad behavior on the part of the boss.
Right.
And you know, you need to take care of it, but it doesn't constitute a hostile work environment from a legal standpoint.
Another opportunity for coaching.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Serious coaching at that point.
Well, I think we've covered everything.
So, Cindy, do you have any final words that you'd like to share?
I just think that we have to impress upon the employers that this is really a serious matter. I think they did the training in the past from different clients that I've talked to. They'll do it online or whatever. They just want to get it over with. But it's much more involved than they think. And it's got to be more intense and more embracing too, as well. And more interactive. So that's a point that we really have to stress. with our clients and moving forward with big and small businesses.
Excellent points. Bill, do you have any final words?
No, I think we've covered it, and I just, you know, to repeat, making sure that people feel comfortable coming forward. They know they can speak up, they know who they can talk to, and they know that their employer will protect them from retaliation. Those are just critical pieces.
Well, this has been a great discussion, and I have really enjoyed it. I look forward to seeing what happens in Chicago. And I love the idea of bystander training. So I wonder if we'll ever implement that in California. And if we don't, employers should implement it anyway.
Well, great. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks
great
so
job.
Much, everyone.
Thank you, Bill.
If you want to reach Cindy Elstein, you can do that by contacting Cindy at peoplebycfe.com. To reach Bill Heffernan, you will contact B. Heffernan at ScreenSafeInc.com. And to reach me, Lisa Hammond, it's Lisa at AttacheWorks.com.